नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। वी रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 69 एंटाइटल्ड नारद विजिट्स कृष्णस पैलेसेस। वी रीडिंग टेक्स्ट नंबर 26 टुडे। ऐश्वर अश्वेर गजे रथे क्वापि अश्वेर गजे रथे क्वापि विचरन्तं गदाग्रजम् विचरन्तं गदाग्रजम् क्वचिक् चायनं पर्यंके क्वचिक् चयानं पर्यंके स्तूयमानं च वन्दिभिः स्तूयमानं च वन्दिभिः अश्वेर गजे रथे क्वापि विचरन्तं गदाग्रजम् क्वचिक् चयानं पर्यंके स्तूयमानं च वन्दिभिः। विचरन्तं गदाग्रजम् मतजी अश्वेगदेवदेवापि विचरन्तं गदाग्रजम् चयानं पर्यंके स्तूयमानं च वन्दिभिः। अश्वे on horses, gajay on elephants, rathay on chariots, kwapi somewhere, vicharantam riding, gadagrajam Lord Krishna, the elder brother of Gada, kwachet somewhere, shayanam lying, paryanke on his bed, stuyamanam being praised, cha and vandivihi by bards. Translation: in one place Lord Gadagraja was riding on horses, elephants and chariots. In another place he was resting on his bed while bards recited his glories. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti points out that riding on horses and elephants is a noon activity, whereas one lies down during the later part of the night. That's it. Om Ajnanti Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya चक्षुरुन्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरोन्वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातम् सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतम सावधूतम परिजना सहितम कृष्ण चैतन्य देवम श्री राधा कृष्ण पदान सहगना ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितमश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगतपते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वंच कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा So we are reading from this particular section of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is quite a different type of section from the regular sections that we see, in the sense that this speaks about Krishna in a very different format. Something superhuman, something unbelievable, something that is, you know, difficult to digest also. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is divided into three sections essentially. The Vrindavan pastimes, the Mathura pastimes and the Dwarka pastimes. So in Vrindavan, Krishna created an internal revolution in the hearts of the Vrajavasis, in the hearts of personalities like Indra, Brahma, Kaliya. In Mathura, Krishna created an external revolution. Throughout comes installed Ugrasen back, created a total revamp of the kingdom, of the leadership. And in Dwarka, he inspires others to do revolution. From Dwarka, he would go out, inspire the Pandavas and come back. From Dwarka, he would go out, you know, Banasur. So like that, Krishna inspired revolutions in other places. So, Krishna is a god of variety. He needs, you know, a lot of variety. He can't be doing one activity only, you know. He has to do many things. And naturally, being Rasaraj, he has the capacity to experience unlimited variety also. So, essentially, Krishna created Dwarka when there was the greatest confusion in Mathura. Generally, creation is very difficult when you are in the middle of confusion. Creation is very difficult when you are in the middle of crisis. So, if you look at Krishna's pastimes, he can create beauty in a highly disturbing mindset. That's very difficult for, you know, a regular human being to be able to do. When you are in trouble, the last thing you can think of is contributing. When you are in personal anxiety, the last thing you can think of is helping others. But if you look at Krishna Leela is all this. In Vrindavan, Krishna was the one who orchestrated the Govardhan parikrama, worship of Govardhan. And when Indra came and disturbed the entire Vrindavan, Krishna should have been the one who was in most anxiety. Because, you know, if you suggest something and what you suggest doesn't work, then naturally you are the one who is in anxiety. He suggested Govardhan worship. It didn't work in one sense. Indra created such a turmoil. But he was the one who was most cool about it. Everybody else was in anxiety. Of course, they took shelter of him in anxiety. And he dealt with this calamity in a most absolutely cool and non-anxiety way. So Krishna can create beauty in a highly disturbing mindset also. Krishna, one of the qualities of Krishna is that everyone he loved, he also respected. Generally, the tendency of a human being is to take those whom you love very casually. You tend to disrespect those whom you love because it is assumed that you love that person. So, Krishna is a personality. If you look at this particular pastime, he loved Narada Muni, but he also respected Narada Muni. So, generally, relationships break when that small barrier between respect and love gets, you know, messed up. So, most people who have tough time in maintaining relationships for a long duration of time, they have a tough time because somewhere down the line, you have lost the respect for the person you love. Krishna shows through his example that no matter how much deep the love is, the respect has to be that much existing. And that's what Vaishnava dealings is about. Vaishnava dealings is about living in a community of devotees whom you love, whom you live with, but at the same time respect. Which is naturally very difficult in the material world because generally there is a familiarity that comes in. Krishna had such an intimate connection with the gopis of Vrindavan. In spite of having such an intimate connection with the gopis of Vrindavan, he still respected them. If you look at every dealing of Krishna with the gopis, they are all respectful dealings. The modern mundane world, when they portray Krishna's dealings with the gopis, they make it very, very disrespectful and very, very mundane. But if you look at actual words that Krishna spoke to the gopis of Vrindavan, they are all very respectful dealings. The last parting words that Krishna spoke to the gopis, look at the kind of respect that Krishna has. He told the gopis that, my dear gopis, for the kind of love that you reciprocated with me, for the kind of love that you have given me, I can never give you anything back in return. I can never repay you anything back in return. The only thing that I can give you is those memories. So even the last interaction has been a very respectful interaction. When Krishna's friend Arjun, I'm just giving you examples of different levels at which Krishna has loving relationships, but he still kept his respect very on. Arjun, Krishna's most intimate friend. And if you look at Bhagavad Gita, in different sections of the Gita, when Krishna is addressing Arjun, he is using words like Kaunteya, he is using like Savyasachi, Gudakesha, Paranthapa, and so on and so forth. Every word that Krishna uses to address Arjun is actually showing Krishna's respect for different qualities of Arjun. So when Krishna is calling out to his friend, he is not just calling out, you know, like, oh dude, you know. He is just not calling out in a disrespectful way. He is calling out by his qualities. That means he is showing the kind of respect that Arjun deserves. As a person grows in his abilities, in his qualification, in his position, in his contribution, according to that, though the relationship may be very intimate, the respect level also has to grow. So if you look at the way in which Krishna dealt with Yudhishthira Maharaj in the beginning, and look at the way in which Krishna dealt with Yudhishthira Maharaj once he becomes the king, there's a slight difference. His respect level actually upgraded a little bit, you know. And that shows how Krishna, even to those who loved him, he had a certain amount of respect towards them. And those who hated him, Krishna gave them space. Dwarka, creation of Dwarka, was actually giving space to Jarasandha. Jarasandha hated Krishna. He kept attacking Mathura. Krishna said, he hates me, so let me go a little away. So give him some space, you know. Krishna's dealings with Shishupal, somebody who hated him, he gave him a space of 100 bad words, you know. He gave him that bandwidth, you know. So he gave him a little space to play around with. And Krishna coming as a peace messenger to Duryodhan, is his space to Duryodhan, trying to accommodate his whims, trying to accommodate his demands. So essentially, what we see here in Dwarka is a very high level of awe and reverence, and a very high level of respectful dealings, and a very high level of opulence. But if you look at the same Krishna in Vrindavan, he was totally a different person. So I'm going to speak a little bit on some pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan that actually show how the same person in a different environment adapted to that environment and behaved in a different way. When he came to Dwaraka, now he's a king, he's Dwarakadish, slightly different, but the essence is still the same. The essence is of love and the essence is of respect. In Vrindavan, the whole experience is of very deep and intimate love. I was reading a lecture given by Barsana Maharaj, and it very beautifully puts in certain thoughts which I will share with my own understanding of Krishna Leela. So this is a typical day in Vrindavan when Krishna is at home early in the morning. So Mother Yashoda comes into the bedroom of Krishna, wakes him up, and every time she wakes up Krishna, she doesn't wake him by, you know, shaking him, by throwing some water on him, by telling him, get up, it's late for school, you know. She is not nagging him, but rather she sings sweet melodious songs, and she sings Krishna's pastimes the previous day in the form of songs. So Mother Yashoda is waking up Krishna by reciting the glories of Krishna. I many times wondered, you know, when we would dress the deities and, you know, put them to sleep in the night, we read Krishna book. I used to always wonder, you know, what's going on, you know. I mean, Krishna is sleeping and we're reading his stories only to him. Like some days back, somebody was asking me, you know, when God meditates, Vishnu meditates, what does he meditate on? When Krishna meditates, we see in Dwaraka, Krishna does meditation also. What does he meditate on? If there was anything better than himself to meditate on, probably he would have done it. But because he is the highest possible experience of meditation, he is meditating on himself only, naturally. He couldn't find anything higher than himself to meditate on. Mother Yashoda, understanding this, highest thing that could be offered to Krishna is Krishna Leela only. So she is offering Krishna Leela to Krishna in a very sweet, melodic way. So offering Krishna Leela back to Krishna, she adds her flavor of songs, her flavor of poetry, her flavor of love, and that's what Krishna wants. So when Krishna gets up in the morning, she begins to dress up Krishna, and all the coward boys, all the friends of Krishna, they come running to assist Mother Yashoda in dressing up Krishna. And they all dress up in different ways, according to the level of intimacy they have with Krishna. Some of the gopas who are very intimate with Krishna would help decorate turban of Krishna. Some of the gopas are very, you know, far away in the rasa with Krishna in terms of sakya also. They would decorate the ankle bells, they will decorate the feet of Krishna like that. And Mother Yashoda, she puts on all kinds of fancy jewelry, all kinds of clothes on Krishna. In fact, the cows in Vrindavan, none of the cows would give milk till they saw Krishna in the morning. So therefore, Mother Yashoda had to wake him up a little early only. Because if Krishna goes out, there will be no milk in Vrindavan. So, when Krishna is ready, and all the milking is done, and everybody is ready, Krishna leaves to the forest of Vrindavan. And as Krishna is leaving to the forest, all his friends, Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yashoda, and all the elder gopas and gopis, they follow Krishna till a certain point into the forest. And at a certain point, Krishna looks back at them and tells them, go back, you know. Apka ho gaya abhi, samay. Vatsalya ras is little over now. Now I need to focus on Sakya ras more. And Krishna looks back at them, and as soon as Krishna looks back at them, they go back. And then, so far, as long as Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj and all the elders are with Krishna, Krishna is very well behaved, very sober, very gentle, smiling. And as soon as they go back, Krishna becomes wild. Just like the Acharya has explained, that just like a baby elephant, when the baby elephant is released, what happens? Baby elephant just goes mad, just runs here and there because he is joyful. So the coward boys, as soon as the parents and the elders go away, they become extremely joyful. They start talking to each other. They start, you know, intimately dealing jokes and so on and so forth. One devotee, he asked Srila Prabhupada that, what do the coward boys talk about with Krishna? Prabhupada said, nonsense. One word, nonsense. So, in Sakya Ras, there is no deep philosophical meaning, and you know, it doesn't have to be that kind of intimacy. It's just casual fun. But the purpose of all their casual nonsense talks is also centered around Krishna, is also centered around giving pleasure to Krishna. Many times when we tend to have casual nonsense talks, our nonsense talks are generally centered around either glorifying ourselves or criticizing others. As long as nonsense talks are centered around pleasing Krishna and giving happiness to Krishna and the devotees, those nonsense talks are perfectly certified. Because Krishna and his friends also used to talk nonsense, but their nonsense was actually centered around giving pleasure to Krishna and actually centered around pleasing Krishna. So, so all of them, they were in harmony, peace, having sweetness, and as soon as Mother Yashoda and all the elders go away, Krishna removes all his jewels, fancy clothes, fancy jewels, throws them somewhere, and the coward boys again dress him. Now with forest flowers, forest leaves, forest fruits, it is a totally different style, you know, because in the forest he gets to be himself. They decorate him with minerals and different colors and things like that. The gopis in Vrindavan, the young gopis in Vrindavan, they are miles away, 20 miles away. But they can see Krishna being dressed by the gopas. Acharya explained, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. They could see at such a distance because their eyes were anointed with love. And they are wondering, why is Krishna getting decorated again? Why is Krishna getting decorated now? Whom is he wanting to please in the forest? Whom is he wanting to, you know, impress in the forest? And then the gopis, they realize that young boy, if he's dressing very nicely, naturally he's wanting to impress the young girls. So they become very happy, thinking like that, you know. So Krishna and all the boys, they begin to play in Vrindavan. And so everybody is in a very playful mood. So seeing the playful mood of Krishna and Balaram, all the birds, all the cows, all the animals, all the peacocks, all of them also get into a very playful mood. And then sometimes the boys start fighting. So when the boys start fighting, it's not that they're using nuclear missiles, you know, they're using bows and arrows and shooting each other down. They are fights with the flowers, with fruits. And a very loving fight. So even fight in Vrindavan is in the mood of enhancing another rasa. So every fight in Vrindavan connects people deeper, bonds people deeper. In the mundane world, fights between people create distances. In Vrindavan, fights between devotees bond them even further together. So, ultimately, the mood is set now. They are all entered the mood of Sakya to a very high extent. And now the boys are ready to take it to another level. So, one boy, he runs around and creates a stage. He draws a box and he says, this is the stage. Now Krishna and Balaram will dance. So as soon as the stage is created, everybody starts jumping, everybody starts enthusiastically, you know, inspiring. And then all of them sit in circles, you know, in front of the stage. And all the animals, all the birds, they come and sit around them to see Krishna and Balaram going to perform now. And musicians, all the musician boys sit on one, you know, corner. And Krishna Balaram come to the center stage. So Krishna is compared to a sapphire, bluish in color. And Balaram is compared to an emerald. And when both of them come together, it creates some kind of a thrill in the audience. And Krishna Balaram come on the stage and they bow down to the audience. They bow down to Saraswati Devi. They bow down to the forest. They bow down to the goddess of music and dance. And then they begin to dance. So Krishna begins to dance like a peacock. And when Krishna begins to dance like a peacock, the earth is so thrilled. This is the only place in the entire universe where Krishna is dancing. So she begins to bring out new flowers, you know, in ecstasy. And seeing Krishna dance like this, everybody begins to sing, you know. And Krishna, he adjusts his clothing, and in a very articulate and a very perfect manner, he starts doing tap dancing, you know. And he creates some kind of a musical rhythm. And Krishna and Balaram, they begin to dance together. So they become so much attracted and loved to each other that they actually go mad in ecstasy. And they embrace each other. So when all the boys, they're looking at Krishna Balaram dance, they become so happy and thrilled that Krishna decides to thrill them even more. So what Krishna does is that Krishna begins to play his flute. And as soon as Krishna begins to play his flute, Balaram, he goes even more crazier. So Balaram, on one hand, he starts twirling. He raises his leg up fully, and on one hand he's twirling around, you know. And when Krishna sees Balaram so ecstatic, Krishna jumps with both his hands, and he is like a cartwheel. He is moving around Balaramji, circumventing Balaramji. And simultaneously Krishna is circumventing Balaramji, simultaneously Krishna is playing the flute, and simultaneously Krishna is taking the dust of Balaramji and throwing it on everyone, you know. So when the boys see the kind of happiness that Balaram and Krishna are having in dealing with each other with so much love, the boys start embracing each other. So essentially, if we have love for Krishna, you cannot have enmity towards anybody else. Look at the whole concept. Here Krishna and Balaram are having fun. The boys are looking at Krishna and Balaram having fun, and they are enjoying themselves, and the way they are expressing their enjoyment is by embracing each other. That means, when you love Krishna, and you want to express your enjoyment, the expression of your love for Krishna is expressed in the form of your dealings with other devotees, your dealings with one another. So you cannot go and embrace Krishna. We don't have that kind of capacity. But if you want to express a love for Krishna, we embrace our fellow devotees. And so if we love Krishna and we hate devotees, something is wrong with our love for Krishna. Something is wrong with the understanding of our love for Krishna. Which means, that means there is some tinge of selfishness in our love for Krishna. So, when Krishna Balaram, they're dancing in this way, the whole audience, all the boys, they are shouting, wonderful, wonderful, amazing. Then Krishna stops dancing and he starts asking everyone, you know, can anybody dance like me? And he's like, you know, everybody says, no one can dance like you, you know, you're the best. And hearing that, Krishna Balaram start dancing even better, you know. They are like really, and seeing this whole pastime, Lord Narayan in the spiritual world, he is smiling. And Lakshmi Devi is looking at him, you know, why are you smiling? And then Lord Narayan, he doesn't say much, because Lakshmi Devi is not going to understand what exactly this means. Dwarka mood and Vrindavan mood are on a totally different platform completely. The one thing that connects both the moods is the love towards Krishna. Of course, the experience of love towards Krishna is totally different. In Vrindavan, we just saw the rasa of the gopas. In Dwarka, the same rasa of friendship is with Uddhava discussing Uddhava Gita. The same rasa is with Arjun discussing Bhagavad Gita. Now, where is this such a gulf of difference in, you know, the rasa, in the same Sakya rasa, but in different places? When Krishna Balaram are dancing in this way, suddenly Krishna is boasting to everybody that, you know, I am the best, I am the best. Suddenly Shidama comes in front and he tells, hey Krishna, you are not the best. I have got evidence that you go to my sister in the night and take dancing classes. When Krishna hears that, he becomes very embarrassed. And immediately he says, yes, yes. I falsely took credit for my dancing. Actually, I am not the best. There is somebody better than me. And then there is a slight mixture of rasa, so Krishna kind of changes the mood and goes ahead, you know. Different pastime starts. So essentially, when we look at Krishna Balaram dancing, when you look at the boys experiencing ecstasy in the pleasures in Vrindavan, so that same rasa of Vrindavan, of Krishna dancing, of Balaramji dancing and singing together, so it actually is a rasa that brings people together. The same thing is in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement in the form of Sankirtan. So Sankirtan means everyone coming together and assisting in a same mission in a happy spirit. That's what essentially Sankirtan means. And Sankirtan is a place where relationships get sanctified. Where relationships actually get purified and sanctified in the mood of cooperation. That is what Sankirtan is. In Kali Yuga specifically, if you look at all other yugas, the process of the Yuga Dharma in the all other yugas are individualistic. Meditation you perform on your own. Go different sages sit in different caves. They don't all sit in one cave together in circle, japa circle or something, you know. They're all sitting in different caves and they're doing their own, you know, meditation. But in Kali Yuga, it doesn't work. It has to be the spirit of cooperation, because individually if you go to sit in different caves, everyone will be sleeping in different caves. You can't do on your own because mind is weak. And therefore, and the two, to experience happiness in a spiritual process is very difficult in this world, because the mind is not convinced that you are happy. So therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement of having japa, which is the internal purification, individual chanting, and Sankirtan, which is congregational chanting, it actually is, Sankirtan is actually preparing ourselves for entry into spiritual world. Spiritual world, every song is a dance, every word is a song, every step is a dance. Now if you go to the spiritual world, and if you are not used to dancing, what will you do over there, you know? You will get bewildered, you will not know what kind of steps to take. So the whole movement of Sankirtan is to prepare us for dancing. In the material world, people are not very expressive. People are not very, you know, when you come into the Hare Krishna movement for the first time and you see people dancing, you look at the reactions of new people. Like, they're shocked. Kya ho raha hai idhar, you know. They just don't relate to that everybody dancing, you know. Because they don't understand that this is a practice for the main dance in the spiritual world, you know. And as you, so actually if you look at from a higher point of view, dancing is actually a complete expression of every element of your heart. Every element of the body gets involved. Every element of the mind gets involved in the spirit of dancing. In fact, in the other traditions also, like in the Christian tradition, there is a story of one man called David. When he saw an ark of convent, he saw some kind of holy place for them. As soon as he saw this place, he started dancing like mad. Everybody who saw him dancing like mad, they said, this fellow is gone crazy. They actually condemned him, you know. What I'm trying to say is that, any time when you feel extremely elated and blissful, you naturally feel like dancing. That's like a natural, you know, end result. I mean, if you look at your exam results, if anybody has had experience with exam results, you know, the moment you get your result, you feel like jumping, you feel like dancing, you feel like singing, you know. So the natural effect of happy person, the natural effect of a happy consciousness is that you feel like singing and dancing. So there are many people in this world who can't sing and dance because they are old, because they are physically unable. So essentially, the whole concept of singing and dancing, like when Srila Prabhupada, once he was describing the mood of Narada Muni, moving on with his Veena and singing and dancing with throughout the universe. And as Narada Muni is moving on with his Veena and singing and dancing, everybody feel like singing and dancing. But many people were very old. They couldn't sing and dance. But they were dancing in their hearts. So essentially, the important thing is that dance is like a form of worship in many traditions. If you look at the South Indian traditions, you know, Bharatanatyam, Kathakali, all these forms of dances, they're actually forms of worship only. So you use your skill, you use your body, you use your mind in serving Krishna in this form. So, essentially, what does dance represent on a philosophical level? On a philosophical level, dance represents that our commitment is such that we are happy to overcome the inertia of stagnancy in spiritual life. So generally, one tends to become stagnant in anything you do. So we need to do something to overcome that stagnancy. That's what dancing is about. When we are practicing spiritual life on a normal level, some stagnancy comes. So at that point of time, when we do something that makes us feel like dancing, that means you are overcoming stagnancy. So essentially in life, when life gets boring, when life gets stale, when life gets, you know, tough, you need something to help you overcome that inertia. And dance is a way which is kind of a celebration, which is like a, you know, ecstasy. Of course, in Dwarka, the world is different. In Vrindavan, the world is different. In Dwarka, we want to experience Krishna like in Dwarka, but in the mood of Vrindavan. See, in Dwarka, if you look at Krishna, Krishna was present in every individual house, which essentially means that in the material world, in this world, we want Krishna to be present in each and every one of our houses. The whole concept of deity worship, what is that? That's actually asking Krishna to duplicate himself and be present in all of our houses and reciprocate with us in the way we want him to reciprocate, or rather in the way we can handle him, you know. In some houses Krishna is offered like one time bhoga, some houses he is offered three times bhoga, some houses he is offered like once in a week bhoga, you know, once in a week dressing. So in different houses Krishna reciprocates according to the resident of the house. That's Dwarka. In Vrindavan, the mood is more like coming together to celebrate Krishna, to coming together to serve Krishna and worship Krishna. Only in the Rasa Leela we find Krishna exhibiting that kind of individual expansion, you know. But on an average, if you look at Krishna's pastimes, he is alone and devotees are many. It's very interesting. Though he is alone and devotees are many, they experience an individual reciprocation with Krishna, that one Krishna. In Dwarka, Krishna expands himself into many to allow himself to reciprocate with each one on an individual level at different time zones. Look at this. In one house, he is in one time zone. In another house, he is in another time zone. Within one city, 16,000 time zones. It's quite unbelievable, you know. And it's almost impossible to comprehend how within, from one palace to another palace, a time zone can change. One country to another country time zone changing, we can understand, you know. One palace to another palace time zone changing is a little difficult to comprehend. Dwarka Leela is a little complex. The reason it is a little complex is because the people's mind in Dwarka also is a little complex. And the more complex your mind is, the more complex is Krishna's dealings with you. Rather, he reciprocates according to your mindset, you know. And therefore, people like Uddhava, super intelligent, disciple of Brihaspati, Gopas and Sakas and Vrindavan, they are disciples of no one. There has to be difference in reciprocation levels. There has to be difference in, you know, the way Krishna connects with them. In Vrindavan, as soon as Krishna goes into the forest, he removes all the jewelry and all the, you know, fashionable clothings and wears simple clothes. Because the boys are simple people. He wants to reciprocate with them in the way they can deal with him. And in Dwarka, he can't wear simple clothes. He can't wear, you know, forest flowers and forest clothes. Why? People are a little more complex than Vrindavan. Naturally, he adopts. Of course, we are not even trying to attempt to say that being complex is bad and being simple is good. What we are simply attempting to say is that in whatever way you are, Krishna is ready to adopt himself to suit your need. Krishna is not different in Dwaraka and Krishna is not different in Vrindavan. Krishna is simply a servant of his devotees. According to the type of devotee you are, Krishna is ready to adopt himself to suit your needs. And that's Krishna Leela. So it's not that three different Krishnas exist. Krishna in Dwaraka, Krishna in Vrindavan, Krishna in Mathura. They are not three different Krishnas. It is the same flexible God. It is the same flexible God who is happy to assist you in the way you want him to assist you. Even if you see in the material world today, Krishna consciousness, when it enters into people's lives, it is not that you are supposed to adopt Krishna consciousness according to Krishna's needs. Krishna consciousness is ready to be flexible according to your needs. And therefore, the process is such that anybody and everybody can practice it at their level. If Krishna is so flexible, why do we become so rigid in preaching Krishna consciousness to others? If Krishna is so flexible in reciprocating his devotees, why do we become so rigid saying that this is the only way you can reach Krishna, no other way? And therefore, without this understanding of these differences in mood, our preaching becomes ineffective because we are preaching in a mood that is inconsistent with Krishna's mood. And only when we understand how flexible Krishna is in his mood of reciprocation with his devotees, we can be flexible in our approach towards non-devotees, in trying to bridge the gap, making them connect with Krishna in the right way. So Krishna is a very flexible person, as I said. And Krishna can be harder than a thunderbolt and softer than a rose. When demons like Aristasur and so many other demons, when they come to attack Krishna, with one hit of Krishna, he can crack bones. And the same Krishna, when he's dealing with the gopis of Vrindavan, they touch him, he feels softer than butter. So how does Krishna, the same Krishna, on one hand he's able to crack bones, on another hand, can you imagine, if the Krishna had to use the same power in holding a gopi's hand, you know, they will all have to go to, you know, orthopedic surgeon, you know, fractured hands. Kya ho gaya? Krishna ne haath pakad liya, you know. So it's not that Krishna is using the same intensity in dealing with different personalities. So both these personalities are reciprocal of our mentality. So when we approach Krishna with an enraged ego, we bring about our own destruction. When we approach Krishna with service attitude, Krishna, the experience of Krishna is a very joyful one. So according to the way in which we approach Krishna, according to the mentality in which we approach Krishna, coming to Krishna is either a festival or is a disaster. Many people come to Krishna with the wrong intentions. And therefore, Krishna is not so much interested in your actions. He is interested in your intentions. They may be coming with the perfect right action, perfect rituals, but absolutely wrong intentions. Krishna understands how to reciprocate. So therefore, this whole pastime of Damodar Leela, where Satyavrat Muni is glorifying Krishna's, this pastime of Mother Yashoda tying Krishna in a loving bond. If you look at the way in which Satyavrata Muni starts Damodar Ashtakam, he starts with considering Krishna as Ishwar. Namam Ishwaram Sachidananda Rupam. He starts with Dwaraka and it ends in Vrindavan. Mother Yashoda tying up Krishna, and he remembers Radharani. And the Acharya's comment that, you know, when Mother Yashoda was binding Krishna, the last rope that came was from Radharani's hairband, you know. So that kind of bound Krishna, and he was tied. Therefore he is called a Radha Damodar. Otherwise he is supposed to be only Damodar, because Radha comes in the form of that, you know, last rope. He is known as Radha Damodar. So, look at the range of Satyavrata Muni. Satyavrata Muni starts with Namameshwaram, which is Dwaraka mood, and it ends with the most intimate, deepest mood of Vrindavan, the love between Radha and Krishna. And that's the gap that we are trying to bridge. The journey from Dwaraka to Vrindavan. So, the way in which sadhana bhakti, the way in which the process of Krishna consciousness is taught to us is that, first when you come, you don't worship Radha and Krishna. Even if you worship Radha and Krishna, you worship them in the form of Lakshmi Narayan. We are taught. The deities at your home are not Radha and Krishna, they are Lakshmi Narayan. That means we worship them with awe and reverence, considering them to be Dwarkadish, considering them to be Lakshmi Narayan. And later on, when we bridge the gap between Namameshwaram till the end of Damodarashtakam, it may take us a whole lifetime to bridge that gap, then we reach Radha Gopinath. So till then, we are in Lakshmi Narayan temple down, and then we come up to Radha Gopinath temple, you know. That's our whole life, literally. The sadhana bhakti. It starts with sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti means rules and regulations. And it aims towards raga bhakti, which is spontaneous love. To reach spontaneous love, you have to begin at Dwaraka. You have to begin at the concept of worshipping Krishna as a master and a king. So therefore, when we look at Krishna Leela in this way, then we understand that there is a lot of work to be done to reach Vrindavan. Therefore, Krishna has progressively come out of Vrindavan to bring people back to Vrindavan. So if Krishna stayed in Vrindavan, he wouldn't have been so much accessible to the world. Because Krishna in Vrindavan, he is just absorbed in his intimate loving devotees who love him so much with absolutely complete faith. He takes the risk of venturing out of Vrindavan to come to Mathura and then come further on to Dwaraka to actually pull people back to understand what Vrindavan mood is. and therefore, in understanding Krishna Leela, in understanding the mood in which Krishna is trying to help people to become connected to him, we have to understand that the devotees of Krishna, they adopt the mood of Krishna and they become flexible to allowing people to come to Krishna. In the context of Haridas Thakur converting the prostitute into a great devotee, we find that there are so many empiric moralists who would actually condemn someone who has the nature of a prostitute. So, the understanding is that the worldly morality has no more value than worldly immorality. In the sense that both immorality and morality are actually attachments. Because either you tend to become too attached to morality or you become too attached to immorality. Both of them not necessarily will give you Krishna. There are many people in this world who are highly moral and their morality is their obstacle from coming closer to Krishna. And there are many people in this world who are highly immoral, but if they are not attached to their immorality, those highly immoral people, they very much can come to Krishna if they are not attached to their immorality. Look at the case of the prostitute. The prostitute was an immoral person, but she was not attached to her immorality. And because she was not attached to her immorality, she could immediately connect with Krishna. And Ramchandra Khan, on the other hand, who sent this prostitute to Haridas Thakur, he was highly attached to his morality, never came to Krishna. Therefore, I am not saying that you have to be, you know, immoral. What I am trying to say is that whatever you are, don't be attached to it. Be attached to the fact that we need to come closer to Krishna. And when something brings us something, so this prostitute, by being highly immoral, she also was highly humble. She was not at all proud of herself. She was not at all proud of the fact that what she was doing or who she was. If she was proud, she would have been attached to her immorality. So when there is pride in your heart, pride towards what you are doing, then there is no possibility of abandoning that action.
Ramchandra Khan was extremely proud of his morality, and therefore he was not ready to abandon his morality to take up Krishna consciousness. Prostitute was highly immoral, but she was not attached to her immorality. She was happy to give up her immorality because she was doing that due to whatever circumstance it was. But she was attached to, she became eventually attached to Krishna by the blessings of Haridas Thakur. So therefore, I'll end with a very beautiful shloka, which actually talks about what is the mood of a good devotee. A good devotee is a person who tries to look at somebody else in whatever situation and whatever level they are and tries to bring them to a higher level. Just like Krishna in Vrindavan, having a very different standard of living, a standard of reciprocation with his devotees, coming to Dwaraka, completely changing his standard to accommodate the mindsets, accommodate the needs of the Dwarakavasis. Similarly, how a devotee becomes flexible, this shloka brings it out very beautifully. This shloka says, Narasya Abharanam Rupam, Rupasya Abharanam Gunam, Gunasya Abharanam Jnanam, Jnanasya Abharanam Shama. This verse says, Narasya Abharanam Rupam, the ornament of a human being is beauty. Rupasya Abharanam Gunam, the ornament of a beautiful person is good qualities. Gunasya Abharanam Jnanam, the ornament of good qualities is knowledge. Because without knowledge, good qualities don't survive. And Jnanasya Abharanam Shama, the ornament of knowledge is forgiveness. So essentially, as devotees, if we really want to consider ourselves beautiful, we have to be able to accommodate lapses of people who are not at that level. And the more flexible we are to accommodate the lapses of people, and the more flexible we are to help them get Krishna in the way they can handle Krishna, to that extent we are considered beautiful, to that extent we are considered knowledgeable, and to that extent we are considered to have good qualities. And therefore, without forgiveness and without accommodation, actually there is no beauty. And therefore, Vrindavan is a place where there can be no defects. Dwarka is a place where, in spite of devotees not being as simple as Vrindavan, Krishna changed himself completely to help the Dwarakavasis develop the mood of Vrindavan. Therefore, he sent Uddhava to Vrindavan. See what it means to be a Vrajvasi. Can you imagine? Krishna, he dealt with Uddhava in the way he wanted. Gave him Uddhava Gita. Dealt with Uddhava as a friend on an intellectual platform, being a disciple of Brihaspati. But Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan to learn what it means to be a Vrajvasi. Krishna didn't tell Uddhava that he is wrong. Krishna didn't tell Uddhava, "Arey, be simple like the Vrajvasis." He didn't preach to Uddhava about Vrindavan mood. He told Uddhava, "Go and see what Vrindavan mood is." This is my understanding of Dwarka Leela. Hare Krishna. I am sorry if I spoke anything which is beyond my realization or understanding, and I am sorry if I spoke something that is wrong. I would be happy to, you know, hear corrections, comments and clarifications from any devotee. Very grateful to have an opportunity to serve in some small way. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.